In the morning, we begin the day. We begin our Zazen with a gatha. We call it the gatha of atonement. It can be called gatha of purification, of being at one with who and what our life is, and in a way enabling us to let go of anything that we carry along that blinds us or hinders us from being functioning as who and what we truly are. In a way, it is somewhat of a adaptation of a traditional gatha, which is in Sino-Japanese called Sangemon, gatha of purification, atonement, allowing us to let go of, cease being blinded by what we might be carrying along, what might come along without us even knowing, and yet keep us from being this ordinary life that we are, this ordinary life that everyone we encounter is, and yet this ordinary life which, if we maintain the usual habits and tendencies, we blind ourselves, hinder ourselves, do what is not skillful. So we start with all harmful actions ever committed by me since of old. In a more literal translation, it's all evil karma committed by me. Evil karma. But of course, in English, once we use a word like evil, we get into all sorts of tangles and weeds, judgments, beliefs. Harmful is a word that we find more skillful and supportive in enabling us to be who we are, enabling us to see what needs to be done, see what needs to be done in our life. In a talk by Genpo Yamamoto Roshi, who was the teacher of Soen Nakagawa Roshi, one of my teachers, he talks about practice is to let go of the roots of greed, anger, and folly, to sever, he uses the word, that's very strong, translation, but in a way is to let go of, at least momentarily, in our intention, in our hope, in our practice, in our actions, this all harmful actions which we carry along, whether we know it or not, but in a sense, or it's something that we often allow to blind us to what needs to be done, blind us to being who we are in as this world moment, on account of beginningless greed, anger, ignorance, folly, delusion, all similar words, ignorance of what is so, ignorance of the nature of the universe life that we are. How does it come here? We don't have to figure out. What does it do? When it arises, we get to see it. But in a way, it pushes us, despite the fact that we don't see it, and therefore intending to let it go, so to speak, or to use the stronger word, sever it. Don't have to sever anything, because if we let it go, then though it might re-arise, but each time, if we can be clear on it, we can release it. All harmful actions ever committed by me, which have cause and effect consequences in the universe, and though usually we focus on so-called committed by me, my harmful actions, in a way it's useful to also say all harmful actions ever done to me, ever done to me. All harmful actions that are committed by me, all harmful actions that, in a sense, actions in the universe are embodied in our life in ways that we know and don't know, in ways that we can sense, and in ways that are beyond our sensing. And yet, whether so-called I did it or someone else did it to me, those are just explanations and stories about the cause and effect universe of this moment that's here, that's our life, that's the life of the whole world, which we don't have to figure out where it came from and what caused it, except to see right now, this is how it is. Right now, this is how it is. And this is the world that I live in, that we live in, and in which we have the opportunity to practice in. We have the opportunity to act in. We have the opportunity to be skillful in supporting the nature of this universe life that is our life, that is my life, that is your life. Harmful actions ever committed by me, committed to me, on account of beginningless greed, anger, ignorance, born of body, mouth, and thought, meaning born of our very being, body, actions, mouth, actions. We all know the things we can do with mouth and things other people do with mouth. Thought, in a sense, it's an all-inclusiveness of what and how we act in the world. What and how, as Genpo Roshi says, the 84,000 delusions, 84,000 delusions, meaning all the delusions that create trouble for us. All the delusions about self and others, about what I need and what I don't need, what I should have, what I should have been, what could have been, who's to blame, all these so-called delusions. These delusions which blind us, which in a sense keep us from doing what will serve our life, serve the life of the universe. Born of my body, mouth, and thought, I now acknowledge, I now, you could say, I now confess, but it's simpler and less fraught with, what should I say, connotations of Western culture and Eastern culture, which attribute blame, which attribute good and bad. I now acknowledge rather than saying confess and purify, I now acknowledge and am at one, which is the word atone, but it's also what atone is really about, is being at one with this universe so that this one life that I share with the myriad beings in all directions can manifest. I now acknowledge and am at one with them all. Acknowledge and am at one with them all. And out of that, I can do zazen. I can sit with all beings when I practice. I can sit and be alive with all beings in my actions so that I'm not limited or bound by my self-centeredness, but rather can be this bigger at oneness. Genpo Roshi in his comment says, if this is done, original true nature appears, delusions disappear. However, it's not really that way. Even though we say it in that way, he says, the point is not to switch from delusions to enlightenment or switch to true nature. That's the important point to see, that our practice is not to switch, that there's something for us to get rid of or to become somewhere, someone else. He says, but the point is not to switch from delusion to enlightenment, but rather to realize what you already have, to realize who and what we always are. Way, that's what our practice is, to realize and act as who we truly are. To realize and act as who we truly are. To act skillfully. In thinking about this earlier today, yesterday, for a little bit, I thought of something I mentioned to one of you. In the Hebrew tradition, the Hebrew Bible, there's a phrase which says, Yahavta l'rayacha kamoicha, you should love your neighbor as yourself. Love your neighbor as yourself. A later commentator, Hillel the Elder, rephrased this a little differently. Hillel lived about, let's say, at the turn of the millennia, when we go from before Common Era to the Common Era. He phrased it, what's harmful to you, or what you object to, do not do to others. In a sense, it's a negative one, a negative way of saying, love thy neighbor as thyself. But in a way, I like it a lot better. And I like it a lot better in a way I think a personal experience can clarify why I think the not doing to someone else what you don't want done to you in a way is more skillful than doing to others what you want done to you. All of us have ideas of what we want done to us. What we want. I want this, I want that, I would like people to do this with me because I like this, I like that, whatever. When I was young, part of where I lived is that at certain times of the year we had a communal space where we all ate meals together. It was part of a Jewish holiday called Sukkot, Tabernacle in English, I think is the way they phrase it, where we would each bring our food, but we would all eat together. So this was 50, 100, 200 people, big space. So, of course, we all bring the food that we like. We like what we like. You bring potatoes, you bring rice, and you each ate your own food. One day I was down there, I was probably 10, 11, maybe 12, maybe even 13, I don't remember exactly the year. And I had some salami and I think potatoes, but I don't remember what else was with the salami. I remember the salami was there. There were slices of salami my mother had given me. So there was this neighbor two tables over, and he saw, oh, you're eating salami. And he said, ooh, you're missing something. And he was a grown adult. I was a child. But he came over, he brought over what, he says, I really love this when I eat salami, so this is what I like. So, I'm going to do for you what I would want done for me, what I like. I love you as much as I love myself. And he took some mustard and he squeezed it onto the salami. He loves the mustard. So, of course, he assumes I would love the mustard. Unfortunately, I couldn't stand mustard. But he was doing what he loved. So he was doing to others what he thought they would love. That's how he was doing for others the way he would love to do. He had perfectly good intentions. However, if he had looked at it the other way, not doing to others what you wouldn't want done to yourself, if you wouldn't want someone else to put food on your plate that you didn't want, that you didn't say you wanted, that you didn't ask for, he wouldn't have put there. He might have asked me, would you like some mustard? I have wonderful mustard. But he wouldn't have put it there. So in a sense, not doing to others what you wouldn't want done to yourself, in a way, is fundamental practice. Of course, it requires of us to take the step and be sensitive to what would I want, not want for myself, and then know that that kind of action towards others is not appropriate unless they indicate they would want it. So it's the refraining rather than doing that's the important thing. It's to enable us to realize what we always are, who we always are. If we can release any harmful actions, consequences in our life, in our way of functioning, in our way of seeing dualistically and holding on to ideas of self and others that we have, and instead being attentive to the other of what's needed, then we can see who and what this other, so-called, see who and what ourself already had, how we can support and encourage ourselves and others in being who we always are, not have to add anything more to them, much less add what we think they need and take away what we think they don't need, much less take away what they think they need, but we don't think they should have. Genpo Roshi, Genpo Yamamoto Roshi, continues. He says, it's like a persimmon, this point of not switching from delusion to enlightenment, but rather realizing what you already have, realizing who you always are. That's the Gatha of Atonement. Gatha of Atonement is to realize, to be at one with who you always are. He says, it's like a persimmon. Before the persimmon, most of you know, well, I shouldn't assume anything, see? I know, I like persimmons. And particularly the persimmons that are shaped pear-like. Now, those persimmons, whether they're called Japanese persimmons or whatever other name you call them by, they grow where I live. So before the persimmon grows sweet, it's astringent. Astringent is a technical word. It's a little antiseptic, but I'll use a stronger word. It has a bitter taste that when you put it in your mouth and you chew it, it's like having sand in your mouth and all over your teeth and tongue and lips, and it is, can't get it out. Even if you drink water, swish your mouth out, even if you use a toothbrush, and try to get it out. It's astringent. It's very strongly astringent, persimmons. However, Genpo Roshi says, however, unless it is astringent, it will not become sweet. And that's the way it is with persimmons. If you allow the astringent persimmon to slowly, slowly ripen, not on the tree, but after you've removed it from the tree. It could be on the tree, but it gets mushy on the tree before you can get to it, usually. But if you let it ripen and it becomes soft, then it becomes very sweet and tender. The astringency goes on. But it goes away, I should say. But he says, unless it is astringent, it will not become sweet. But, he says, after all, astringent or sweet, it is always persimmon. So, astringent or sweet, unless we go through the practice of releasing delusions as they arise. Delusions are beliefs of self and others. Delusions are caught in self-centered dream, holding to all sorts of self-centered thoughts, feelings, beliefs, and various other habits, tendencies that we don't even know of until they arise. Unless we go through that, we can't be who we are. But it's not a matter of switching. It's a matter of realizing that we always are this perfection. When we're astringent, fine. That's our practice. When we're sweet, fine. Then we can be exactly who we are. So our zazen isn't to become someone else. Our confession, atonement, whatever word you want to use for this, isn't in order to become someone else, but to discover acknowledge and be at one with who we always are. That's why it's so easy to sit zazen. Because from the beginning, you are this, if we use the word, awakened life. If you don't do anything harmful, then your life and the life of everyone you encounter manifests the whole universe. See? Then the whole of the teaching is, don't do to others what you wouldn't want done to you. Then naturally, you can be loving to others, loving to yourself. You don't have to make an effort to do to others what you would want done to you. It's natural. That's the reason we start with at-one-ment or atonement. In a way, it's to be able to release, to be the astringency and yet to release the astringency, because from the beginning, the astringency is the perfection, the perfected life. Even the delusions which arise are simply opportunities, not opportunities that come from here and cause problems, but opportunities that are part of the cause and effect of being who you are. And yet, if we hold on to self-centeredness, they cover our eyes, they blind us and deafen us so that we can't see what needs to be done. And instead, we hinder ourselves. We hinder who we are. We hinder the always persimmon or always true nature. Whatever word you want to use. We hinder not just that so-called we are I am, but so-called we every other being that you encounter. Therefore, all of their so-called harmful actions towards you are just seen for what they are and do not have to give rise to harming for you. As well as, that's why I've added that line, all harmful actions ever committed to me the original just says all harmful actions ever committed. In English, we translate it into by me. But by me leaves that part where many of us Westerners hold on to all sorts of grievances. He did, she did, I owe them for long times. And those blind us to who and what our life is at this moment, at this moment, at this moment, if we hold on to those. Because then we can't live fully, truly as we are. We can't be simple Zazen because those old stories are up here in front of us and we only see the world through them. So, if someone puts on mustard onto your salami, got a paper napkin and wiped it off and ate the salami with this strange taste mustard, but it wasn't much mustard and I was able to handle it and I appreciated that to the extent in my youth could appreciate that this person was being nice to me, being generous, though not skillful. So hopefully we can be generous in a skillful way by not doing what's harmful to us and offering to do in a skillful way what is not harmful. Can't help it. We bump into each other. As someone once said, a Zen center, a practice center is like a bag of potatoes that you put into a running stream. The running water pushes the potatoes against each other and the edges, the knobs, the problematic spaces rub off against each other and the potatoes become smooth, peeled, ready to use. That's the nature of our life. And yet, to all harmful actions ever committed by me, committed to me, be at one with them. Act skillfully. Atone. Let go of any reactions, beliefs, blame that blinds us, and then also blinds others from being the wonderful life, the true nature that they are. I'm purifying all, acknowledging and being at one with them all. That allows us to be purified, to live purified, which is the life we always are. There is only a purified life, nothing but that. Only an awakened life that we all are from the beginning. And yet, we get blinded by all sorts of things, all sorts of astringencies, which we just have to go through. So, please take good care of any astringencies that come up, and then you can be the sweetness as it is, whether astringent or sweet. It's all this true, ordinary, wondrous nature. Thank you.